It will come of no surprise if I tell you that we don't all die at the same time. There are people who we love who go on before us. And we know they're not coming back to us physically on the earth. But we also should know this. We're going to go where they are. We go at different times. As God calls us home, we go at different times. And so there are going to be departures in our life of those who are dear to us. That idea is addressed in our reading today from the 13th chapter of John, and also the beginning of chapter 14. What I'm going to do today is go past the chapter divide. I'm going to have us study verses 31 through 38 of the 13th chapter of John, and then go to the first four verses of John 14. Because they talk about departing and yet expecting to go be with them again. Jesus is going to depart. He's going to die on the cross, be laid in the grave. On the third day, he's going to rise again, but then he's going to ascend to heaven. He's going to be there, and he won't be among them anymore. And they will one day have their time to be with Christ, to ascend themselves, that the spirit will leave their body and they will be in the presence of Christ. And so it is that we have this concept of going somewhere that others are not going to go, meaning not in that exact moment. It'll become more clear as we read the scriptures today. So let us begin in John chapter 13, verse 31. I remind you that in our previous lesson, Jesus has washed his disciples' feet on the Last Supper night. After he had done that, he gave a prediction that one of them was going to betray him. And then the question was asked, well, who will it be? And Jesus said, it's the one I give the sop to. He only said it to one of his disciples. The others didn't understand why Judas left suddenly, but that's what he did. And that's where we pick up. It's the Last Supper night. It's also the night of the betrayal of Christ by Judas Iscariot. And as that night continues, after Judas has left the building, these events take place. And you'll see that in the first phrase of verse 31. Therefore, when he, meaning Judas, was gone out, when he left the building, Jesus said, now is the Son of Man glorified. That is, what's going to happen now, instead of you seeing me in my humility walking on the face of the earth, you're going to see me risen from the grave. You're going to see me glowing white. You're going to see the glory of God. And how is that going to be expressed? The resurrection, the work of God to bring life from death. That's a tremendous thing. It glorifies, and only God can do that. Only God can take that which is dead and make it alive. And he does do it. And so he's glorified when he does do what man could never do. Therefore, when he was gone out, Jesus said, now is the Son of Man glorified, and God is glorified in him. Now, that's always going to be the case. We're going to have God show favor upon Jesus, and then what Jesus does shows favor upon God. Same thing is true in our lives. God shows us favor. He gives us grace, and he gives us abilities, and he gives us desires. In this new birth experience, our desires change. And when we go from being self-centered to completely servant, people will look at us and say, something's changed. And what is it that's changed? What's changed is God did a work in you. So who should be glorified? God. God did a glorious work in saving your soul, changing your whole outlook, your whole desires. And when you exhibited those changes in your life, it gave glory back to God. Because who can do that? Who can make one who is a notorious sinner become one who desires nothing more than to love their neighbor as themselves and to serve them and to love them? So now is the Son of Man glorified, and God is glorified in him. If God be glorified in him, God shall also glorify him in himself and shall straightway glorify him. It says, what I'm talking about is not some super, very far-reaching event. It's not a long time in the future. What I'm talking about is right away. You're going to see the glory of God, not resurrection day. You're going to see the glory of God in my resurrection day. You're going to see the glory of God in a special way, and it will speak of your resurrection day in a time that is appropriate for you. My time is different from your time, but it's going to be right away, literally right away. Within 24 hours, he's going to be put to death. Within 3 days, he's going to rise from the grave. Right away, straightway. In the book of Exodus, chapter 33, Moses is close to God. He has seen God in a variety of ways. He's seen God at Mount Sinai. He's seen God in the Red Sea. He's seen God feed the people with manna. He has seen the glory of God. The people who once were slaves are free. And the more he sees of the glory of God and God acting, the more he wants. And so in chapter 33, Moses makes this request. He said, Moses said, I beseech thee, talking to God, show me your glory. And if we were to ask that same thing today, rather than being hidden in the cleft in the rock and seeing God go by and learn his attributes, God might do this for us when we say, God, show us your glory. He might show us the resurrection of Jesus Christ. He might give us the eyes of faith to see that and to embrace that and to realize this is what God has done. It's a great quest. It's a great desire. Lord, show me your glory. And what is the glory of God? It is the work of Jesus, the work of Jesus on our behalf. Back to verse 33 of our 13th chapter of John. Little children, yet a little while. He speaks to them as little children. That's an endearment term. Oh, Jesus loved his disciples. He loved them dearly, like they were his own family. Little children, yet a little while, I am with you. I'm going to be in your presence just for a short period. Every day has gotten shorter. That is, when I first started with you, it might have been 3 years ago, but there was going to come a day where that was no longer so. Well, that day is now. I'm not going to be with you. There's going to be a small gap of the 3 day period after the death of Christ. And then there's going to be 40 days renewal that Christ will come and be resurrected and be walking and talking and teaching them for 40 days. But then he'll be gone. And so whether or not we're talking about 3 days later or whether we're talking about 43 days later, it really doesn't matter. Both of those are short times. And so, little children, yet a little while, I am with you. Ye shall seek me, and as I said unto the Jews, whither I go, ye cannot come. So now I say to you. Now he said this in chapter 8 of John. He said it to Jewish people who were not believers in him. He said it to people who were detractors, who were unbelievers. And he says, I'm going to heaven, and you can't come with me. The reason was different from it is for what he's talking about here. In that case, it's because their sins weren't going to be paid for. They were going to die in their sins. But when he says it to these people, he reminds them, I've said this before, but he wants to let them know it's a little bit different. And the difference is, when I say you can't come, I mean you can't come today. You'll come in your own time. And we have to understand that. Whither I go, you cannot come. And I would put in parentheses, now. So now I say to you, he's letting them know they're going to feel an absence in their lives. Whenever anyone close to us passes away, we feel empty. There's something missing in our life. So now we go to the 14th chapter, and he says, let not your heart be troubled. And why would they have been troubled? Well, because he's just basically reminded them that he's going to die. He's not going to be with them. But he lets them know a great promise. And this passage that I'm going to read now from John 14 is a passage I know I've used it at every funeral I've ever preached. It's a tremendous comfort to us of what Christ has done for us and for all his children. And that the end of our life on earth is not the end of life, but rather we're going someplace, and we're going someplace, heaven, that Christ prepared for us to go to by dying himself and being risen from the grave. And he says, in my Father's house, that is in the heavenly abode, my Father's house are many mansions. Now, a modern-day translation might put this as rooms, divisions of rooms, tents, tabernacles. There's all kinds of way to describe this, but it's a dwelling place. In my Father's house are many dwelling places. And I do like the language here, mansion, because it lets us know that where God is not ordinary. It's extraordinary. It is luscious. It is precious. It is wonderful. And so if we're going to talk about a dwelling, let's go ahead and think of the lofty mansion as opposed to something that is, you know, an old shack that's fallen apart. We ought to have a different view. But you may come across a Bible version with a different word than mansion. And almost all the modern ones don't use that word. But I'm reading the King James, and that's the word they have. And I like it. I like to hear it when I have the sermon at a funeral. In my Father's house are many mansions. If it were not so, I would have told you. Isn't that wonderful? Christ is never going to lead you off the path of truth. He's going to give you the straight facts. And if there was no heaven, he would have let us know. But there is a heaven, and he does also let us know. I go to prepare a place for you. Now, some people interpret this to mean that somehow or another, Christ the carpenter is up in heaven somewhere, building a new house every time someone comes to their conversion moment and says, I believe in Jesus Christ, the only Son of God who saves me from my sins. And so, you know, as soon as that happens, he's up there building a new house just for them. I don't understand that to be the idea here. I think he's talking about he's preparing to go to the cross. And that prepares us for our heavenly mansions. Notice the way he says it in the verse. In my Father's house are, they're already there. In my Father's house are many mansions. There's a preparation made already for you. He knows you're coming. And he's prepared for you. And he makes the way prepared for you through the blood of Christ shed at Calvary. Jesus is saying, I got to do that. I have to go to Calvary. I have to go to the cross. I have to die. And then you'll be ready to go to heaven. I make it where you're ready to go to heaven. I'd go to prepare a place for you. And if I go and prepare a place for you, I will come again and receive you unto myself, that where I am, there ye may be also. And whither I go, you know, and the way you know. And so he's saying here that there is this way. There is this way that he is. Now, in our next lesson, we're going to talk about this concept that Jesus' disciples did not fully understand what he's talking about. But I think we can get the idea that where I am, there you may be also. Think about the cross. When Jesus was dying on the cross, there was one of the thieves who ends up being a believer in Jesus Christ. And he says to Jesus, he wants to be remembered when Christ comes in his kingdom. It's amazing how much faith the thief on the cross had. He could see a dying man and know that even though that was the case, that he was dying physically, he was still the King of Kings and Lord of Lords and had a kingdom, and he wanted to be in that kingdom and he wanted to be remembered. And Jesus said to him, "Thou shalt be with me in paradise." You'll be with me in paradise. The Apostle Paul, in describing death, he said, to depart and be with Christ is far better. That is, be on the earth. That heaven is a far better place. But notice how he describes it. There's a departure involved. Your spirit leaves your body. And then there is the ascension. There is the yielding up of our spirit to God. And when we get to heaven, who's there? Jesus is there. Why? Because that's what heaven is. It's to be with Christ. That's paradise. That's the wonder of it all. To be in the presence of Christ. A lot of people, when they contemplate death, they said, "I can't wait to see my mother," which is a very sentimental and lovely thought, because, you know, one of the great gifts in life is the love of your mother or your father or anyone who loves us. It's a great gift. And so when someone that we love and that we cherish and we have loved and cherished, and now we miss their physical presence, we say, boy, won't it be a happy reunion when we get to heaven. And it will. I actually think that we will know each other and some way, shape, or form. I don't know exactly which me is going to be up there. The very young me, the middle-aged me, the old guy me. I really don't know. The Bible says we will know as we are known. And so we're going to know each other. So I'm going to know the people who have already gone on before in my family, life. My mom, my dad, my grandparents, they've all passed away. And I look forward to actually seeing them. And I've done this elaborate thing about the future and homecoming and so on to make this point. The first person that we're going to see, and the one who will have the highest priority for us, won't be any human being that we knew on the earth. It's going to be Jesus Christ. The glory of heaven is to be with him. He's the reason that we are able to go. I go to prepare a place for you, and if I go and prepare a place for you, I will come again. We look for the coming of Christ again one day. There is something glorious about Jesus' resurrection back in the days of Jesus Christ. But there's also a glory in the coming resurrection of all the family of Jesus Christ as he has purchased them according to the plan of God. It will be glorious. It'll be something that glorifies the name of God. And this is his plan. And so in the midst of great sorrow, he wants us to remember that there's something better yet to come. Listen, when I have recently lost people who are very dear to me, and I feel the pain of that. I feel the sadness of that still. But in the midst of all that sadness, there is this great comfort. I know that they are far better. I know that whatever disease they have no more. I know that whatever pains they have no more. I know whatever lack of peace they had, they now have peace. Whatever was making them despondent in life will never make them despondent again. All those things are changed, and they're with Christ. And that has been made possible by him. And he's telling them, this is for you. Where I am, there ye may be also. Now, I want to go back. I skipped ahead purposely because it mentioned where I am. But let's go back to catch up the end of chapter 13, verse 34. A new commandment I give unto you, that ye love one another, as I have loved you, that ye also love one another. And so it's interesting that it's called a new commandment. I think perhaps that we might call it the new commandment because it's part of the New Testament church. And the emphasis of the New Testament church is, yes, there were 10 commandments. Yes, there were hundreds of commandments in the Old Testament law of Moses. But they can all be summed up with the word love. Love to God, that's the greatest commandment, and then love to each other. And so he's reminding them of that basic fact that the church must be loving. And so this is going to be their legacy. Not the word law will not be the most important word. The word love will be the most important word. And I think John, more than any other gospel, emphasizes that. You see a lot of love in both his gospel and in his epistles. There's just so much that he writes about the need for us to love one another love others more than ourselves. But this is what Jesus says about the concept of love. The idea of actively loving our neighbors as ourselves, of being caring and sharing. By this love, by this shall all men know that you are my disciples, if you have love one to another. That's going to be the main sign of Christianity in the New Testament age. Love. Love. If a church is unloving, they're not Christian. They might have it on the marquee. They might have it on the church sign. The word Christian might be there. They might proudly thump their chest and say, I'm a Christian. But they don't have any love. They're just, as the Apostle Paul said in chapter 13 of 1 Corinthians, you're just a clanging cymbal. You're just a loud gong. You're just making a bunch of noise. What do we want to see in a Christian's life? If you claim to be with Christ, you need to be loving. And so this is going to be a part of the major message of Jesus, not just identifying that he is the Savior, and going to die, but also that we are going to live, and the main thing we're going to be known for is love. Now, in John chapter 13, verse 36, there's going to be another mention of something very sad about this night. The saddest thing was the betrayal of Judas that was coming up. That was super sad. This is sad, but not in the same degree. Because this is going to be recovered from. This is going to be repented of. But it is a lapse. a lapse in Peter, especially, is going to be seen. Peter's all bold when he hears Jesus talking about dying. You know, I'm going to go away and you can't come. Simon Peter says this in verse 36. Simon Peter said unto him, Lord, whither goest thou? Jesus answered him, whither I go, thou canst not follow me now, but thou shalt follow me afterwards. So it's becoming clear with those words that what Jesus is talking about is whither I go, he's death, his physical death. You can't follow me now. You're going to. Listen. And if Jesus doesn't come back first, all of us are going to follow what Jesus went through in death ourselves. It won't be exactly the same. We're not going to be crucified, but we're going to die. And it would be afterwards, but it's taken care of. You're going to go straight into heaven from that instant, the blinking of an eye. It's boom, so quick. So we see what he's talking about. I wanted to emphasize this verse because of that. You cannot follow me now, but you will follow me afterwards. This is what David said about his baby that died back in the Old Testament story. David had a baby that died. And before the baby died, it was sick. And as it was sick, David was crying and praying and fasting. He was doing everything he could approaching the throne of God to have that child's life spared. But the life of the child was not spared, and the child went home to be with Jesus. And this is what David said. And in fact, as soon as it happened, he changed his behavior, and he was doing a lot of crying before the child died, and after the child died, he wasn't crying anymore. And as people ask him, what in the world's going on? Oh, this is not normal. This is what David said about it. But now he is dead. Wherefore shall I fast? I can't change that. There's nothing to pray about. If they're dead, that's not going to be reversed. Can I bring him back again? I shall go to him, David said, but he shall not return to me. I go a place, Jesus says, that you're not going to go. I'm not going to, but you're going to come later. And that's what David's saying. That child's not coming back to me, but I'm going to go to him. Very important. And thus Jesus says those words of comfort. Let not your heart be troubled. We're going to go to be with him. In our own time, we're going to be with him. In our own time, we're going to be pain-free. In our own time, we're going to be tear-free. In our own time, we're going to be sorrow-free. In our own time, we're going to be with Christ. Let not your heart be troubled. Ye believe in God, believe also in me. In my Father's house are many mansions. If it were not so, I would have told you, I go to prepare a place for you. Glory be to God for his marvelous promises to us. Christ did go away, but that was according to his promise. He's coming back again one day at the day of resurrection and glory, according to his promise. We are going to have our spirit go immediately to God, which gave it, and we're going to be in instant joy, according to his promise. At the day of resurrection, our bodies will be raised, united to that spirit, and there we shall be ever with the Lord, according to his plan and his promise. How marvelous, how gracious God is, how much we ought to be living for him who died for us. May God add his blessings.